You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic.
Even under the best circumstances, travel is stressful for horses. We've all been there, stuck on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. You can make the journey knowing that U.S. Rider is there for you. Get peace of mind on the road with U.S. Rider's nationwide 24/7 roadside assistance coverage for both you and your horse. Join today at usrider.org.
I'm your host, Haley Peffer, and my guest today is Dr. Teresa Beechler from Iowa State University. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited about our topic today, and I'm sure our listeners will be as well, because I'm sure many of them are dealing with late-term pregnancy in their brood mares and foaling. And I'm excited to be back because, as our listeners know, we took a little bit of a break for the month of January. So can you just start off by telling us what physical and behavioral changes barn managers and horse owners might notice in the final months of their mare's pregnancy, and which ones might say you need to call your veterinarian?
Absolutely. There's a lot of changes that kind of start coming a little bit of insidiously before a mare foals. And mares can vary if they've had foals before or if they're maiden, in how they express some of these changes or how soon before foaling they may exhibit them. What we usually see first is we'll start to get a little bit of an udder development or development of the mare's mammary glands. And that typically can begin about 4 to 6 weeks before her expected due date, with the due date on average being about 340 days. But for mares, it can range normally from 320 days to 360 from ovulation, with some going a little bit over that, which makes it very fun for our owners to keep watching them. So again, mammary development first, about 4 to 6 weeks. Then we'll also kind of start to see relaxation, particularly relaxation in their hind end. So if you feel the muscles right around their hips and on the outside of their hind legs on either side of their vulva, those will start to kind of soften and get a little jiggly if you were to palpate them and bounce them. Usually about a week to 3 weeks before. And this will kind of progress as the mare keeps getting closer and closer to giving birth. The actual udder will start to produce some secretions, and it'll become more milk-like, with most mares doing this at about a week to 10 days before they actually foal. That can vary, and that'll change from first being yellow and kind of thin to actually looking more like milk or colostrum. And then one of the last things we see is the development of wax. And so that's when the kind of milk or the secretions that are coming from their teats will form little beads or concretions right on the end. And for most horses, that usually means they're going to foal within the next 24 hours, but it can, for some mares, extend for 24 to 72 hours, which is also a little frustrating for our owners. For when to call the veterinarian would be if you see these signs very much ahead of her due date. So particularly thinking about that mammary gland development. And so if a mare begins to do that significantly ahead of 4 to 6 weeks before her due date, that's often the first sign we see if they're having a complicated pregnancy or developing something like an infection within the uterus, such as placentitis.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a good one for people to know, especially at this point in the year. So one thing that I often hear barn managers talk about is potentially changing a mare's nutrition as she develops. Do you believe that people should change their mare's nutrition during late gestation? And what are some common feeding mistakes that you might see at this stage?
Absolutely. Such a great question. And there's so many answers and opinions, which makes it really hard for a nutrition standpoint. From a development standpoint of the foal in the mare's uterus or in utero, the majority of the big growth period for the foal does happen in kind of that latter third of gestation. So for most horses, we don't really need to make any changes to their diet or their nutrition plan in early or mid gestation, potentially, you know, bumping that, what they're on, towards that kind of last trimester, if you will, or that latter third of their pregnancy, we can do. But I usually will base it off of the mare's body condition, because each mare is different, how they maintain their weight, or some, you know, gain weight really quickly if we increase their grain and some don't, to really gauge it on the individual and just try to keep her in a good body condition score, ideally about a 7 out of 9, particularly in late pregnancy, but then also after she's giving birth, so she can have adequate milk production when she's supporting her baby.
Do you have any tips for checking your mare's body condition score, especially during late gestation, when maybe just her pregnant belly might make it difficult for some people to understand where she's at?
Absolutely. It is definitely more challenging, because they definitely kind of lose their flank and their waist, if you will, with their big bellies as they're carrying their foal. So we often will still judge it off of kind of the coverage over their ribs. So if we palpate their ribs, how easy can you feel them or see them despite their pendulous belly? And then how easy can you feel or see the point of their hips or their spines at those stage?
Awesome. Yeah, that's super helpful. So let's talk about foaling now just a little bit. Is there an ideal environment for mares to foal in? And what might that look like for our barn managers? Like, we're talking stall size, ideal footing, lighting, and even biosecurity on farms with multiple horses.
Absolutely. For where to foal varies a little bit depending on your location and often your environment and what time of year it is. For me, you know, many people use foaling stalls for sure. But if it's good weather, in theory, a nice, dry, safe, clean pasture may also be a good environment. It is much harder to monitor them out on pasture, though. And so a lot of times we do recommend foaling stalls just from that aspect of the management. For stall, we often want them a little bit bigger than some of our routine stalls when we're just keeping horses that are not pregnant in. Kind of the bare minimum that we'll usually think about is a 12 by 12 foot stall. But in most cases, most folks want to go much larger than that. So at least a 14 by 14 might be even more ideal, or extending that into like the length of two stalls, for example. So like a 12 by 24, if that's possible for owners. The goal of having a little bit more room is just from a safety standpoint. So a comfortable space for her to hopefully lay down and deliver, where both the owners can monitor them closely. And then also, once she has delivered, to have a safe environment with enough space that she's not accidentally stepping on the foal, and they can kind of move around and do their first normal milestones together safely. Lighting is really, I guess, a little bit hard to clarify or to talk about, but your normal routine lighting for the barn is great. If the owners are using like foaling cameras, the lighting may need to change just so they can get a good depiction on the foaling cameras, if that's how they're monitoring their mares at home. But biosecurity, definitely the last point you brought up, is very critical. And definitely if owners are having a lot of mares foal out and using the same foaling stalls, or potentially if they're at a foaling facility that has a lot of mares coming and going, we want to definitely make sure we try to disinfect it if we can. And it's like cleaning out bedding, or if we can wipe down the walls, for example, just to try to minimize any transmissible diseases that just due to the number of horses that might be in them. But big, dry, safe, quiet are kind of my big hallmarks I'll talk through clients with.
Awesome. Yeah. And in talking about that, how can barn managers balance that close monitoring of these mares when they're nearing foaling time with minimizing stress, especially, you know, if you are in a barn that's maybe busier or there's multiple mares?
Absolutely. It's such a tricky thing, because we want to make sure we don't miss anything when it's not happening correctly, or miss an early sign of foaling for sure. But if we pester the mares too much, if you will, we can definitely disturb them. And sometimes, you know, if they're heading into stage one labor, it can cause them to delay that actual labor process and delay that a little bit. I remember one of my mentors said, the foal determines the day the mare's going to foal, but the mare determines the hour. So not, you know, bothering them or trying to keep traffic out of the foaling area, particularly in the hours that are most common for mares to foal. It's lovely when they foal during the day, but most times they'll foal at night for us or between midnight and about 4 a.m. in some cases that's been shown in the literature. But trying to keep it quiet, but in a way you can keep a good eye on her, is really critical.
Definitely. And when we're preparing for foaling, what are the most important supplies to have on hand? And are there any that you see that are maybe overemphasized or just unnecessary?
Yeah. For supplies, probably, this is probably really silly and owners are probably going to roll their eyes a little bit when I say it, but having an access to a trailer, if you get in trouble, or a plan, can you get the mare to a veterinary facility, or at least have a plan that a veterinarian is available and on call that could come if she were to have difficulty giving birth or a dystocia, is really crucial, just because of if they do have difficulty delivering the foal, the time frame to hopefully get the right intervention and get that baby delivered is very, very short before we potentially might lose that foal and you know, just then be trying to remove it for mom's health. So again, having a trailer, I often will tease, if we're starting to do our foal watch, let's make sure it's hooked up and ready to go. So it's at least one less step you have to do, and you can just load her up and take her if that was what the plan was going to be between you and the closest veterinarian. Other items that we'll usually recommend to have in a foaling kit, something to disinfect the umbilical cord is great. Some clients will use like a dilute betadine solution or a dilute chlorhexidine solution. And that's just something they can either spray with a spray bottle on the umbilicus after the long umbilical cord that attaches the foal to the mare and her placenta breaks. Or potentially a lot of folks will keep dip cups, if you will, and then you just gently kind of expel the fluid onto that umbilical stump just to keep it nice and clean for the first few days of life and prevent infection. Other supplies, towels, if you were to need to stimulate the foal, if it's not moving or appearing to be breathing appropriately right away, or if it's a little chilly for some reason, depending where we're at. Other things like, I really like zip ties or some sort of twine or something like that, that if they need to tie off the umbilical cord or potentially even help tie up that placenta is all something we can think about as well. Other supplies, let's see. Scissors. Scissors are also very, very important for a foaling kit. And scissors are probably the most important thing. A scissors or a pocket knife, or a lot of times in the hospital, it might be something like a scalpel blade for mares we have in for our foaling management program. And what I'm kind of leading to for that is if we have a mare that has a specific emergency called a red bag, that's when basically the placenta, which is the organ that supports the foal, when it's in the mare's uterus and kind of helps deliver all the oxygen and the nutrients and remove all the waste, and it touches every aspect of that uterus, it should break or rupture right at the mare's cervix when she goes into labor. And so what we should see coming out is the foal covered in the white membrane or the amnion. And if instead it comes out in a red bubble, that means that placenta did not rupture. And that's really, really critical for our owners to hopefully identify and then intervene immediately. And so if we see that structure, that basically means the foal's not getting any oxygen, and we want to cut it as soon as we can and then try to help deliver that foal. And hopefully if you have another person, they can call a veterinarian as well and let them know what's going on, that you're going to need likely evaluation and care.
Well, you've led us perfectly to my next question, which is about the normal stages of foaling. So could you just walk us through what a normal foaling would look like and maybe highlight key time points when intervention would become critical?
Absolutely. So for normal foaling, we'll classically break it down into three phases or stages, if you will. So stage one, which is kind of the preparatory phase. Stage two is actually delivering the foal. And then stage three is when the mare delivers that placenta after birth. So stage one, that's basically when the foal is getting ready to be born. And so a lot of times our foals might be upside down in the uterus or kind of lying on their backs. And may or may not have their legs extended or kind of out like a diving position, if you will. And so in stage one, the theory is that it's the foal's responsibility to hopefully roll itself over and then stick its legs out so they're nice and straight, as well as hopefully straighten its head and neck. So then when she actively goes into labor, it's in the right position to be born. Signs of what owners may see in stage one really vary. And the hard part is that these can also be seen all throughout late gestation, all throughout the whole time they're monitoring their mares for foaling, which are really, really frustrating. They can look colicky and crampy. Some mares are more sensitive or dramatic than others. Like some will look at their flanks, some will lay down and roll, some may lean against the walls, etc. They may appear agitated. Some may be a little bit more anxious in pace than others. Other signs that you may or may not see is they may go off their feed or, you know, not eating hay as well during this period of the preparatory phase. And then in some cases, they may start to lift and kind of pump their tail, if you will, where they move it up and down. Normal length of time for true stage one, we generally will say is about 1 to 4 hours in length for that all to happen. But again, some of those signs are really difficult to say are really stage one in some cases, if the mare was colicky, for example, in late pregnancy, which can be a whole host of different causes of just positioning of the foal to all of our other gastrointestinal causes of colic too. So it can be very long or arduous for our owners to monitor sometimes. For when stage one ends and we enter into stage two, or actually when the foal should be delivered, the kind of the distinction between those two stages is when her water breaks. And so when that placenta ruptures at the level of her cervix, and typically most mares will expel a large volume of that fetal fluid. And that's what the owners will see. In some cases, it is a nice big whoosh of fluid or a rush of fluid. Some can be kind of slow. And so that can be a little challenging sometimes. But shortly after, the actual length of time for the foal to be born should happen in fairly short order, which is a little bit different from some of the other species like our cows or particularly our dogs that often have multiple puppies to deliver. And so the time frame for actual stage two of labor or the delivery of the foal typically occurs within 10 to 30 minutes. And if we get beyond that 30 minutes, that's definitely a time point when we want to consider contacting a veterinarian right away and potentially evaluating that mare to see what's going on and if that foal can be assisted, if that makes sense. And so foaling basically ends, the end of stage two ends. Once the foal is on the ground and has been expelled and delivered and everyone's very happy. And then that final stage of foaling is, again, when she passes her placenta. So that basically occurs from the minute the foal's born until the entire placenta ideally is out and has potentially been passed onto the ground. And that can happen fairly quickly after foaling in some cases, but we consider it normal if she delivers that placenta within 3 hours of giving birth to her foal. If I go back to stage two to kind of bring up your point about key time points or when intervention becomes critical, there's a couple things that I'll look for when I'm monitoring our mares for giving birth or during stage two labor. And so again, the total time is very important. So if we're getting between 20 and 30 minutes and that foal has not been born, that's a step to think about something's going on. A mare should make progress about every 10 minutes, if that makes sense. And so within the first 10 minutes, I want from her water breaking, can I see feet? Can I see that amnion or that white membrane that covers the foal? Can I see its head? And if I haven't, that in and of itself is a time point that I may want to evaluate and determine, is there something wrong? Is that foal in not the right position? And that's why she can't make any progress. But if she's making progress and keeps making progress within every 10 minutes, we'll let her continue to do that process as long as we don't get over that total time point. And why it's kind of important is during labor, this is when the cervix is relaxing all the way and kind of stretching to accommodate that foal to come through her birth canal. The rest of the tissues within her whole back end and her vagina are also stretching. And so it kind of lets everything relax and lengthen so that foal can fit through without hopefully causing any trauma or tearing. But so again, those are kind of when we first see that foal within ideally that first 10 minutes of her going into labor. I also like to make sure, can, again, you see all the pieces you're supposed to see. So can you see 2 feet? One ideally a little bit in front of the other, and then hopefully that foal's nose. And if you can't assess that within the first 10 minutes, and then as she's making progress, that might be another point we need to intervene. Other one we brought up a few minutes ago when we were talking about supplies, but definitely if we don't see that amniotic membrane, the white membrane, and it's more the true placenta, if you will, or the red bag, that's again when we need to intervene right away and get that opened with whatever mechanism you can. Again, scissors if you have that in your foaling kit, or a pocket knife or something like that, for example.
Yeah, so you touched on some of these a little bit. But could you go into a little bit more detail about some of the most common late-term pregnancy or foaling-related emergencies that you see? And is there anything that barn managers can do to reduce the risk of any of these?
Yeah. So dystocia is probably definitely the one that our owners or our managers would have to deal with first. And again, that just is not delivering the foal in appropriate manner. For our horses, that's often due to the positioning of the foal. Labor is very, very fast in these guys. And so if they're not in the correct position again, and often, you know, evaluating that or evaluating that on the phone with a veterinarian potentially is somewhere where they can intervene. After delivering birth, one of the, you know, more common complications that we'll see is the mare's not passing that placenta within the right amount of time. And so if that placenta is not passed or it's retained over 3 hours, that is another time point when we recommend owners or managers contact their veterinarian, just because the longer that is retained, it can make the mares quite sick, and they can progress to being, you know, very systemically ill, to even unfortunately developing laminitis, where they can be quite painful and may or may not be life-threatening for them, depending on what's going on. For reducing the risk, for dystocias, if I go back to dystocias for reducing the risk, unfortunately, there's not great ways we can reduce our risk other than just monitoring them really closely and then intervening when we can or as quick as we can. For retained placentas, there's again probably not the specific things we can do to make that happen, you know, better or to reduce that from happening at all necessarily, but evaluating it and monitoring for it is critical. And so definitely if the mare has passed her placenta, we like to recommend for our managers to save that tissue and ideally put it in a trash bag and keep it. And so when the veterinarian comes out, if they're doing a routine examination on the foal and the mare, ideally that's between 12 and 24 hours after they give birth, then they can also look at that placenta and they can say, is it thickened in areas? Is it an abnormal color? Have abnormal findings on it that we're actually worried the foal may actually be compromised? Even if it looks okay right now, it might actually be sick and start to become clinically sick within the next few hours to days. Is it actually all there? And so are we missing pieces, which may not be super easy to see until she starts to become ill, going off feed, getting a fever, potentially having discharge coming from her vulva, things like that. Late term emergencies are hopefully pretty rare. They do happen, unfortunately. So like we can have things like trauma to the mare during birth. Things are reports of like postpartum hemorrhage, or if they were to experience in what's called like a uterine artery rupture, things like that. So if our owners notice the mares are not acting appropriately soon after birth, to again, contact their veterinarian right away as soon as possible if they see any concerns such as laying down excessively, being excessively pale, not wanting to eat, not wanting to care for the foal, things like that. It's just another reason to get evaluated.
Is there anything that barn managers can do to prevent red bags, or is that more of a situation where you just need to be able to react to it when it does happen?
Yeah. Absolutely. So red bags are really frustrating. We know there's some conditions of pregnancy that make them more likely to happen. It doesn't guarantee they will happen, thankfully, but it makes them more likely. And that's when the placenta is thickened in cases of like ascending placentitis. That's a bacterial infection of the placenta, basically that get access to the uterus through the mare's cervix. Other things that can make red bag occur are if mares are on fescue pasture or receiving fescue hay. There is a basically a toxin in the hay, the fescue hay, if you will, that also can cause that placenta to get thickened, along with a whole other host of things that can happen with pregnancy, length of pregnancy, her milk production, and then potentially also contributing to a dystocia for other reasons. Preventing it, unfortunately, we really can't do, but again, just like you said, monitoring and then intervening as soon as you can. We can unfortunately have red bags in completely normal pregnancies. Sometimes that's what we'll see in our hospital foaling system, to where the ones we're worried about tend to not be, and the mares that sometimes are apparently healthy or have no risk factors are the ones that'll do it. And again, intervening as soon as possible is how we can hopefully help prevent complications from happening to that baby as much as we can.
My final question for you today is about the immediate post-foaling care. You briefly mentioned this a little bit with some of the emergencies, but could you just talk a little bit more about what barn managers need to know about the immediate post-foaling experience for both the mare and the foal, just in the first 24 hours or so?
Absolutely. So the first 24 hours, it's really critical time for mom and the foal. Particularly if they've never foaled before, or they're maiden mare, this is a time where they're trying to get used to what is expected of them, and some mares have very strong opinions about that, or it's a learning opportunity for them. And so it's kind of keeping a very, very close eye soon after birth is important to look out for normal behaviors of the mare to the foal. Being nurturing to it, not being aggressive towards it, or avoiding it for nursing, for example, if they're unsure of the foal or if they're uncomfortable with it, approaching their mammary gland, for example, to nurse. And so that's very critical. We don't want to over get in the way, kind of when we were talking about minimizing stress during the monitoring process. Definitely intervening too much sometimes can make those behaviors worse, but we like to monitor for them. So I often will recommend giving the mare some time soon after birth so she can hopefully acclimate to that foal, bond with that foal, if that makes sense, within the first few hours. But then intervene as soon as we can if we notice anything we're concerned about, or particularly again if we're seeing untoward behaviors to that foal. Other things for post-foaling, once they've had time to bond, again, we often will recommend dipping that foal's umbilicus to try to prevent, again, any infection with either that kind of betadine solution or that blue chlorhexidine solution. And then it's really monitoring them for their milestones in many cases. So we often will refer to a 1-2-3 rule, if some of our owners have heard of that. And so as soon as the foal is born, it should basically be able to sit up. They'll often be moving and calling to the mare right away. But within that, for the first part of that 1-2-3 rule, they should stand within the first hour. They should be able to hopefully nurse within 2 hours for the second or the two part of that 1-2-3 rule. And then three doesn't have to do directly with the foal itself, but gets back to passing that placenta within 3 hours after birth. And so monitoring for those milestones and making sure that's happening appropriately. If we have a foal who's not able to stand successfully with an hour, or particularly if it gets even more prolonged or they're not nursing successfully, that's when we'll start to get worried. Is there something else going on with this foal? Is it sicker than we understand? Is it potentially having like a dummy foal syndrome? Or basically that's when they're just not able to nurse effectively sometimes, to a whole host of different sequelae that can come with that. And so those will hopefully be periods where they can again identify problems. If they're not nursing, not standing, contact their veterinarian to get them evaluated and see what's going on. Is this things we can manage on the farm? Are these things that we potentially need to get them into a hospital setting, for example, for more advanced care or diagnostics? Other post-foaling care for that bull mentioned, dipping that umbilicus. Some of our owners will do things like desensitization protocols, and I would say, it's very loved by many people out in the equine field, and others, aren't as fanatical about it or as strong. And that's basically trying to expose the foal to lots of different tactile stimulation sounds, for example. So touching its legs right away, rubbing it with a towel, for example, turning on a pair of clippers near it so it gets hears those sounds. Those are some things that some of our owners or our managers may incorporate into their system with the idea of hopefully if they're exposed to some of those things early in life, getting them used to them and doing them for them later in life are a little bit easier.
Awesome. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you today, and I really hope this helps all of our owners and barn managers heading into this foaling season.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.